Let's go on a trip.
Let's go on a trip.
Yeah, baby.
It's not too bad. What was the question again?
Okay, let's go. I'm Angela Caterns.
I'm Ian Rogerson.
And welcome to Suddenly Senior. This is a podcast series for those of us who've reached a certain age in life.
That's right. You can join if you're not our age, but it'll be a lot more fun if you are.
So strap yourselves in, check your blood pressure, light your spliff.
Pour yourself a small bevy and let's go.
If you're listening to this podcast, chances are you've probably read an article or three about the possibilities of living longer and perhaps have even considered ways to look younger. Dr. Norman Swan is interested in living younger, longer. That's the name of his new book. Norman is known, of course, around the world as the host of CoronaCast, and he has legions of fans who've been listening to the Health Report on ABC Radio National since the 1990s. And he joins us on Suddenly Senior. Norman, hello and welcome.
Thanks, Ange.
Welcome.
Thanks, Ian.
So you write about felt age. Why do we feel younger at times and older at others?
Well, that's right. There's no point in living younger, older, if you feel like shit, really, to be blunt.
Yeah, go for it.
And what I looked at when I was writing the book was what age we'd like to be at different ages. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if you're 12 years old, you want to be like the cool 19-year-olds.
Yeah.
If you're 19-year-old, you want to be like the cool 25, 26-year-olds. And then you turn a corner. Corner is probably at a major birthday, 30, maybe 40. And then you look back in your 20s, you think, oh, wouldn't it be nice, you know, being able to party at 3 till 3 a.m. and then get up and be able to go to work. Actually, some people don't want to be going back there because they don't want to be back in the dating game. But nonetheless, you start to look back and wish you were a bit younger than you were at a certain point. And then you reach a point in your life, and it varies according to people, is that where you become happy in your own skin.
Mm.
You're just happy being the age you are. You couldn't stomach the thought of being
younger.
Yeah,
I couldn't do that again.
Yeah. Exactly. So you're just happy the way you are. And there is evidence that the older you are, I mean, obviously there are exceptions to this, the happier you are.
Yeah. Well, certainly that sounds good, but a lot of people are also in old age going, oh, it's so cold, like it's winter at the moment when we're recording this, and everybody at our age feels the cold more than they've ever felt it before. There are things that you're exposed to at our age now that you never had to deal with before.
Your age, I haven't actually come to terms with it yet. So, to speaking personally, having come from Glasgow, I soon acculturated to Australia, and I've been feeling cold in an Australian winter almost since the day I arrived. But no, look, there are things. You know, you've got aches and pains, you've got a sore knee, a sore hip, you might have had a hip replacement, you might have had a couple of stents put in your coronary arteries, you're taking a few pills each morning, but you kind of accept that. Mm. But when you're 40 and you look at what might be like when you're 70 or 80, you think, oh God, I couldn't stand that, taking pills every day, having had a knee replacement. But in fact, when you get there, it's just part of the deal, really.
Yeah.
And some people would prefer not to take pills in the morning, but if it's going to keep you younger longer, why not?
Norman, your parents crept through to their 90s, as you write.
Crawled.
So did mine.
Like it. Yeah.
Crawled. So did mine. Does that indicate that we'll be long-lived too?
So this whole story of genes versus environment, it used to be said, and people still say, to live a long time, you have to have parents who lived a long time and grandparents. So you have to be in a long-lived family. Now, that's a nice thing to have, but actually it's far less essential now than it used to be. So the fact that my parents and maybe your parents got to their 90s was probably not genes. In the case of my parents, it was a lot of expenditure on the part of the healthcare system getting them there. And they'd smoked earlier in life and they were not in good shape. So for the book, I looked at the influence of genes. And it used to be that to get to 100 was a genetic abnormality. A nice genetic abnormality.
Oh, so you were a freak act, really.
You were a freak act. A nice freak act, but a freak act nonetheless. You worked for a long time. You were youthful for a much longer part of your life than other people. And you got to 100 and you were in pretty good shape. And then you kind of fell off the cliff after that, but you got to 100. These days, people are getting to 100 without necessarily having the genes because it's the environment that gets you there. We're not smoking as much. I'll come back to the reasons why you're getting to that. But genes become less important. Where genes kick in is at the extreme of old age. So the extreme of old age used to be getting into your 90s or 100s or 100. Now the extreme of old age is 105 or 110.
Oh, wow.
So there's not that many people get there, but it was a rare gene anyway to get you to 100. But you can now expect to get to your late 90s or 100 if you've had a reasonably good life.
Mm.
We are already living younger longer. So without having done very much or thought about it very much, I mean, everybody thinks about it, but your chances of dying in the next 12 months at 80 years old today are the same as a 60-year-old's 50 years ago.
Wow.
So you've essentially got the body of a 60-year-old. So your chassis is younger than the number of years you've been on the road. And they're big picture issues that have got us there this so far. So we're not smoking as much.
Mm.
Very hard to find a 50-year-old who smokes. Now, smoking is hugely pro-aging. It doesn't just give you heart disease and cancer. It ages your tissues. Doctors are getting better at recognizing blood pressure, treating it. Blood pressure, next to smoking, blood pressure is the next most toxic thing for aging. So it doesn't just give you heart attacks or strokes. Blood pressure ages your tissues.
Right.
Cholesterol is similar. Now, we are getting fatter, and these benefits might be tailing off, but we've got that in the bank in terms of blood pressure, cholesterol. Since the war, more and more people have completed high school, and they're going on to further education, whether that be a TAFE or whether that be a university. And the further you go in education, the longer you live in good health.
Mm.
So the later you get dementia, the later you get heart disease, the later you get cancer, if indeed you get dementia at all. If you're educated, you basically have more control of your life. You got more choices. You got more money in your pocket. You probably get better housing. So if you've got more control and you don't feel under pressure in your life and you've got more choices and freedom to make those choices, your brain translates that into physical signals in your body.
Right.
And these physical signals can either be youthful signals in terms of slowing down the aging process, or if it's very stressful and you feel out of control and under pressure, it's pro-aging influences on your body in a variety of ways.
So you can actually talk yourself into aging in a way.
You can. Well, you could. That's right. But these are mostly subconscious.
Makes me think of Clint Eastwood did somebody mentioned it was on Twitter. Clint Eastwood said he's 91. He's just turned 91. And what keeps him young, he says he gets up every morning and he doesn't let the old man in.
Yeah.
That's kind of what you're talking
well,
about.
Well, it is partly what we're talking about. And retirement is part of this story. So Clint Eastwood's never retired.
Mm.
He still makes a film every year or two. And makes them very well. So retirement, if it's to the couch and the latest Netflix series, is not good for aging.
Mm.
And again, the brain runs everything. You get into this pro-aging mode. It's not the fact that you've got to be earning a wage, but we need to work.
And or so, have an interest?
It could be an interest, but it's also work, volunteering. It's getting up in the morning, it's going and doing something, whether that be Meals on Wheels, whether it be working in the hospital. You don't actually have to earn an income, but you actually have to be doing complex activities. So people say, go off and learn the violin, go off and learn German. That's great if you do that, because you do it with other people, because other people have an influence on your brain and your relationships. That social environment translates to physical messages in your body, but also working, doing stuff every morning. You don't have to be earning a living, but you don't want to be sitting on the couch.
Norman, you also write that how you respond to stress is very important. And so we all respond to stress quite differently, don't we? Some of us can sort of deal with it and shrug it off, and others really take it to heart and take it on board.
That's right. So there's two parts to the stress story. One is they've looked at people who've got to 100 and looked at what were the features of them as people. And one of the consistent things is not that you haven't gone through adversity. So it's how they responded to stress. And it's exactly as you say, Ange, it's they tend to shrug it off. They tend to get over it. If they get angry with somebody, they get over it. If there's a period of adversity, they get over it. They don't fester. That seems to be a consistent psychological frame. But there's another aspect to stress, which comes back to this control thing. And for those listening who've done some psychology, it's called locus of control. And it's a really important thing in terms of living younger, longer. And it's a different aspect of stress. So locus of control is about how much freedom do I feel I have about making decisions over my life or work, and how much pressure do I feel to do stuff that I don't want to do, but somebody else is telling me what to do. Now, that could be in a lousy job with a lousy boss, or it could be you're a single parent with three kids on a pension, or it could be that you're older, you've got three kids who are all struggling, and you've got multiple grandchildren, you've got lots of stress, and you don't feel that you've got any time for yourself. That's chronic stress, where you feel the locus of control. The locus of control should be within yourself. Mm. But if it's somewhere else, with a bad boss, within poverty or deprivation, or with your kids in their situation, that's not good, and that's pro-aging. Doing something about that is a good thing to do, if you can.
Ange and I were both doing an interview on ABC Radio, and we were downstairs in the foyer of the ABC at Ultimo, and there were you in the corner looking into a computer, talking, obviously doing an interview with Adelaide or whatever it is, and you've had a remarkable situation where you have actually been probably the most listened to voice in Australia with a definitely captive audience who've all been locked down. So you've had an amazing audience, an amazing amount of power, and people have been hanging on those words. Has that responsibility sat on your shoulders heavily or lightly?
Luckily, Tegan Taylor and I, who co-hosted CoronaCast, didn't fully realise the impact we were having when we were doing it, because it would have really done our heads in. It would not have been good for us. So we kind of found this out as time went on. Or I would say something on CoronaCast, and then suddenly it would go viral, and I think, what the hell is going on here? And then we got an amazing producer called Will Ockenden, who is really the key to the success of the CoronaCast. It's not so much Tegan and I, but him. And he did the numbers, and the numbers were just bloody amazing. And then we realized what was going on. And when I realized it started to become, that's right, my locus of control went over there to this 3.5 million people. You know, that
that's were, stress.
That's right. When I didn't know that, I was feeling much happier with life. So it was an enormous responsibility, actually, when you realize what was going on. I mean, you always take it seriously as a journalist. It's got to be accurate. You've got to be reasonable. It's got to be well-sourced. But humbling.
And so, Norman, you write a lot about dietary restriction. Can you explain that? What do you mean by that?
There's a lot on the market that's anti-aging. People say there's antioxidant vitamins. Forget vitamins. There's zero evidence that any of the vitamins make any difference to the aging process. They should.
Is that right?
Yeah.
It's this huge multi-billion-dollar industry, right. And they're useless.
Yeah, they are. And they should in theory, because they say that they're antioxidants. Mm. And oxidation, in other words, the damage that oxygen can do to our tissues, rusting from the inside out, antioxidants should help. But the ones you buy in the bottle don't seem to work. There are a couple of reasons for that, just to deal with vitamins on the way through. Well, we'll get to dietary restriction, sorry, Ange, but I need to explain
That's
some
right.
of this first. So one of the reasons is you give these, when you buy a bottle of this stuff and you swallow it, you're taking it in drug-like doses. You're not taking it in the natural dose or the natural environment in which these vitamins exist, which is within food and cooked food, which we can come back to later, because cuisine counts. And also, and this does your head in, is that we tend to think that when you take a little bit of something, a lot is better. But some of these biological compounds behave in a very different way at high doses from low doses. Mm. So, for example, a low dose of vitamin C is an antioxidant. A high dose of vitamin C, there's some evidence that it's a pro-oxidant.
No,
and
wow.
It may speed up aging, for example. Nobody knows why.
Wow.
And then there are all these anti-aging compounds on the side. Now, they're a different set of things. So these are things, you know, people listening to us will know some of these, like resveratrol, which means pus from red grapes, yeah. a diabetic drug called metformin, NAD boosters, NMN, and there's a whole series of others. And I go through these in the book. Now, rapamycin. Now, in theory, these anti-aging compounds should work because unlike vitamins, where there is no evidence in the laboratory that they do work as anti-aging compounds, with these anti-aging, which are not vitamins,
yeah.
supplements, if you like, there actually is evidence in the laboratory that they do slow aging.
Oh, wow.
When you give them to a mouse, the mouse lives 20 or 30% longer in good health.
Mm. Strangely enough, I have an image of a mouse on a banana chair, but I don't know why.
Well, and so you should, because they are very happy.
I'm living well.
Yeah. So they don't work on us. And there are lots of different reasons for that, which I can come to. But what they're all trying to do is imitate the one thing that we know does slow down aging, and that's dietary restriction, which is where this conversation started with Ange. It's a question. Now, dietary restriction really means calorie restriction.
Yeah,
right. So it goes by various terms, but effectively it's a calorie gap in your life between what you burn and what you take in. 10%, 15%, 20%, nobody really knows. But in all animal species, and it looks as though it's true in humans, dietary restriction, calorie restriction, slows down the process of aging. And what these anti-aging compounds are doing, so they know what the happens at the level of a cell and the chemistry of a cell that dietary restriction works on. And these drugs, essentially these supplements, are trying to work on the same process in your cells. Now, what the problem with some of these diets is that your body gets used to them.
Right.
And whilst it starts off as a calorie reduction, your resting metabolic rate, in other words, how many calories you burn while you're not moving, decreases. So, in fact, the gap reduces so that you're not burning as many calories at rest as you used to.
So your body adapts.
Your body adapts. And I'll come back to that because that's one reason why some of these anti-aging compounds probably don't work, at least at the moment. So what you've got to do with dietary restriction is you've actually got to exercise a lot and to recreate that calorie gap, not just assume it's going to happen with dietary, reducing your calories. Now, it turns out that exercise does a lot more for you than protect your heart and blood vessels and reduce the risk of cancer. Moderately intense exercise also gets rid of some of the aging stuff that's going on inside your body.
And could that just be walking? Does it have to be full-on workout?
It's got to be a strong enough workout that you're out of breath and find it difficult to have a conversation. Right. So for some people, that's a brisk walk.
Mm.
Some people, that's just a walk down to the shops. But as you get fitter and fitter, it's more and more. So if you're just getting off the couch and starting to exercise and you find that you can do a 30-minute walk quite easily on the flat, then what you've got to do is put some hills into it or do the walk along the flat instead of doing it 30 minutes,
push yourself.
Do it in 20 minutes. Mm. And so that you're getting out of breath. And then once you're doing that, then put some heels in and then make it more difficult and so on. So you've got to work on it.
I love that thing that you say in the book, Norman, exercise is potent. It prevents us from becoming frail and old. That's a great fear of mine. Old people seem to be so frail and fall over all the time, and that's the beginning of the end, really, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And the other thing that exercise does, so you've got to strengthen your muscles as well as your heart and neck, but it flushes out some of the stuff that's going on with aging. So let me just describe some of that, because before COVID, there were people who were spending money going off to Germany to have stem cell transplants. Of course, people said, well, the reason that your tissues are old is that your stem cells are old, and therefore the tissues that the stem cells produce are old. So it turns out that when you have young stem cells, you put them into an older person, they clap out. They become old. Then there's people advertising young blood transfusion. So go and have a blood transfusion from a young person. And there's tantalizing evidence that there's something to that, that might slow down aging.
Well, that's a bit vampiric though, really, isn't
it? Well, it is, isn't it?
It is. So what they've done, so they said, there's this idea that there's some elixir of youth. So is there something in young people's blood? So what they've done is they've hooked up the blood supply of old mice to young mice.
Ah.
And the theory is that the young mouse will rejuvenate the old mouse. That is not what happens.
Oh, wow.
The old mouse claps out the younger mouse and makes the younger mouse old.
Really?
So it's not that the younger mouse has got something special. It's that when you get older, you've got something in you that is reinforcing aging. Now, just one of the things that's happening here is when you're young, the whole cell production cycle is healthy. So in other words, your stem cells produce cells. The cells do their job, whether it be in your bowel or whatever else, And once they've done their job, they die. The body gets rid of the dead cells. New cells come along to replace the ones before. What happens when you get older is that death process doesn't happen as efficiently as it used to. And some cells don't die properly. And they hang around like grumpy old neighbours who call the cops at 1 minute past
keep
midnight
the
when the kids are having a party. And they these old cells, which just hang around and create trouble, they exude chemicals, which are ageing chemicals. They're nasty. It also happens with cancer, by the way. So people listening might already know that pancreas cancer is a nasty cancer to get. Chemotherapy doesn't work very well. Well, one reason is the cancer, the tumour surrounds itself in these grumpy old cells, and they keep the chemo out. And one of the anti-aging lines of anti-aging research is, can you get rid of these ageing cells? Anyway, coming back to the young blood transfusion story, given the story with mice and the old mouse stuffs up the young mouse, what is it? So they said, well, what happens if all we did was just give a saline transfusion to an older person or an older animal? What happens? It turns out you slow down the aging process because all you've done is diluted the crap
that's going through your system.
That's pushing through the system.
How interesting.
So it's not a solution for long-term solution for aging, but it just shows you there are things. So all this is being worked on. So exercise helps to get rid of these senile cells, for example, and clean out the garbage.
Yeah.
A diet that's rich in what I call in the book bioactive compounds. It's better call them bioactive than antioxidants because they do so much more than just slow down this oxidative stress, the rusting. And that's a Mediterranean-style diet, a highly varied diet.
It's always the Mediterranean diet.
Well, it's also the Southeast Asian diet. It's also the Southeast Asian diet, which is very similar to the Mediterranean diet. It just looks different and tastes different.
But, yeah.
And it turns out the cuisine, I think the three of us spoke about this before, a year or so ago. Mm. It's the cuisine, it's how you cook, because when you cook extra virgin olive oil, onions, garlic, and so on.
And not too hot. You
create bioactive compounds that have an anti-aging effect that you can never buy there, and it changes your microbiome. Mm. And your microbiome takes on a more youthful profile. So, for example, all these things work together. So when you get older, you lose people from around you, you might lose your partner. You get to dinner time, you can't be bothered cooking for yourself, you have a cheese sandwich, your diet becomes more monotonous. So not only do you lose the brain effect of having people around you and so on, you actually eat a less diverse diet. Your microbiome becomes less diverse and it becomes more pro-aging. And so all these things feed in together to add up to a much more whole of life approach to living younger, longer.
You say to focus on your waist, Norman. Can you tell us what's the ideal waist measurement for a woman and a man?
I think it's about...
It's 80 for a woman.
It's 80 for... So in old terms, which is what I think, you know, a 34 waist for men, you know, if you're taking a 36...
That's inches, right?
That's inches. And if you're taking a 36, you're too fat, and it's about 30 inches for women thereabouts, which is, I think,
this is all just dangerous. This area, I mean, isn't it better? Isn't the answer to that, have you lost weight? You're looking fabulous.
That's right.
That's the easy answer for that one.
That's right. If your clothes are feeling tight on you, it's not so much your weight, it's whether your clothes are feeling tight on you, and that blouse or shirt is getting harder to button.
And so, how old do you feel, Norman?
Oh, I feel, I feel much younger than I should.
You're looking marvelous.
So I don't feel anything like my age. I don't know what age I feel, but I feel just like I did at 40 and 50. I mean, I'm still able to do a session at the gym. I've got people around me. I've got grandchildren now, which is, I love having grandchildren, but, I don't feel like a grandfather. A young uncle is probably more like it.
Is the thing about grandchildren the fact you can give them back, isn't it?
Well, that's right.
That's half the fun.
What do they call you? I bet they don't call you grandpa.
So by January, if everything goes well, I'll have had 5 grandchildren in 30 months.
Wow.
So I've only got one grandchild so far who speaks. She's in Washington, and she's now going to turn 2. So I'm asking them to call me Zaida, which is the Yiddish for grandpa. Mm. And the 2-year-old in Washington can only get out,
Well, that's nice.
Zaida.
And so your grandma.
So that's lovely. She calls
me
Yeah.
Lovely.
knowing what you know, do you still think we're at a pretty primitive time in medical science?
We've still got a long way to go. We don't understand dementia, and we need to, but we do understand how to prevent dementia, a lot of dementia, and that is by the sort of stuff I talk about in the book.
It's like exercise for the mind.
So what I talk about in the book is BAG, the brain age gap. So is your brain younger than the number of miles you've got on the clock or kilometers you've got on the clock? And there are all sorts of things there. And by and large, the things that keep your body young, which is their diet, cuisine, exercise, and so on, are the things that keep your brain young. And having the people around you reducing chronic stress. Treating these conditions is often immensely complicated. We're getting much better at treating cancer, but it's not translating in many cancers into better survival. We're getting much better at preventing things than we are about treating things. So there's a long way to go. And one day these anti-aging supplements should work if they find out the right way to give them. And they don't understand dose, they don't understand absorption, they don't understand the combination that they've got to be given in. And it might be counterintuitive that you might give a cocktail of these things at very low doses, maybe only once a fortnight, so that your body doesn't get a chance to react to them.
Mm-hmm. You don't want to die, do you? You're a little bit scared of death, is that right, Norman? In fact, a lot scared of death?
Yeah, a lot scared of death. Interestingly, when I've confronted death, imminent death, on a couple of occasions in an acute situation, I've not been that scared. I've been stressed and dealt with it, if you like. Although on one occasion I got post-traumatic stress disorder because I was in a bus that blew up when I was at the age of 14. But what scares me is the blackness in the quiet of the night. Really, that's what scares me. And that's egoistical. I mean, anybody who's really afraid of death has usually got an ego that's far too big. Because how could this world possibly survive without me in it? But really, my motivation is I don't want to get to a point where I'm frail and falling apart.
Yeah, the nappy years.
I'll probably be quite happy to die at that point. I really want to maintain strength, vigor, intellectual capacity, interest in the world around me, and then suddenly something happens and I don't know what's happening.
Suddenly senior.
The lights go out.
Dr. Norman Swan, what an absolute pleasure talking to you.
A pleasure indeed. Thanks, Norman. All the best.
Well, Luke, thanks for having me again. It's always great fun.
Please like and also subscribe.
Thank you for listening. I'm Angela Caterns.
I'm Ian Rogerson.
Leave a comment, as long as it's nice. If it's not,
that's right.
Fuck off.
Yes. See you next time, Ange.
Bye.
And I want wine with my meds.